The Supreme Court will hear arguments next week testing the constitutionality of state laws banning gay marriage. The arguments come from cases in Ohio, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Michigan. As we begin this hour, we're going to hear about the people who brought these cases, some of the names that will be part of a landmark decision this summer, regardless of which way it goes. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg has this report.
It's an extraordinarily high-stakes legal battle, but the men and women at the center of it think of themselves as incredibly ordinary. They include doctors, lawyers, an army sergeant, nurses, and teachers. Most have children and lead the typically harried lives of working parents. They say they didn't set out to be pioneers. They consider themselves accidental activists, meaning they filed lawsuits not to further a cause, but because of the way the bans affected their lives. In Michigan, for example, April DeBoer and Jane Rouse, both nurses, have four adopted children, two of them with disabilities. As April puts it, they didn't plan to challenge the state's marriage law.
We have a marriage. We just don't have a piece of paper that legally binds us to each other.
And we are just the run-of-the-mill, you know, neighbors, parents, our dog. Sorry, apparently our dog doesn't agree.
That's Jane and the dog. Because Michigan will not let a same-sex couple adopt, but will let a single person adopt, Jane has adopted two of the children and April the other two. And while their lives may be ordinary, their deeds are not. Their son Jacob, initially placed with them through foster care, turned out to be the baby April had been taking care of for 25 weeks in the neonatal intensive care unit where she works. The couple would soon learn that doctors expected Jacob to die quite quickly. April and Jane didn't like that scenario and went on a crusade to salvage his health. A year or so into Jacob's recovery, April brought him back to the hospital for tests and took him up to see the head of the neonatal intensive care unit. The doctor was astonished.
The doctor said there's only two things in this world that could have saved your son, God and a mother's love. And he told me apparently he had both on his side.
Jacob is now a thriving five-year-old. As far as he's concerned, April and Jane are both his parents. But under Michigan law, because they're not married, only one of them can be on the adoption papers. The wake-up call about their legal status came after a truck in the wrong lane nearly hit their car head-on. April DeBoer says the near miss got them thinking.
We started to seek out information on protecting our kids and putting wills and trusts in place to make sure that our kids are protected.
But there was nothing they could do to ensure that if one of them died, the surviving parent would get custody of the children adopted by the deceased parent, Jane Rouse.
A judge could award that child to someone else, effectively making them a legal stranger to the child that they've helped raise since birth.
So they went to court to challenge the state's adoption law. The judge told them they'd lose and suggested that they instead challenge Michigan's marriage ban.
I met Randy, and that was August 17th of 1991.
Hundreds of miles away in Kentucky, Paul Campion and Randy Johnson face many of the same problems. Paul, a school counselor, and Randy, a hospital administrator, have been together for 24 years, raising a family of three boys and one girl. Both come from large families. Paul, the youngest of eight, raised in a conservative Catholic family, was an altar boy. Randy, a Southern Baptist, went to church three times a week. As a teenager, he denied being gay for fear of being condemned to hell.
And then when I graduated from college, I decided that the only choice that I really was going to make was to not lie about who I was.
After falling in love, the couple began long conversations about having a family.
We thought originally that being a gay man meant not having a family, because that's what we saw. We decided that that did not have to be the case for us.
Like many of the couples in the gay marriage lawsuits, they decided to adopt. They searched long and hard to find an agency that would even consider them. And in February of 1995, these two preppy-looking white men rushed to the hospital to begin caring for their newborn African-American twin boys. Paul Campion.
Right from that moment, the kids were with us doing feedings every 3 hours, 4 hours, changing diapers. And so we immediately went into parent mode.
The adoption, however, was not final. And again, only one of the two parents could actually adopt. The couple decided that Paul would be the one. And their lawyer advised Randy not to be in court for fear that if the judge saw two men, it would raise questions. So Randy waited in the parking lot while Paul and his sister held the baby boys in the courtroom when the adoption was finalized. Randy Johnson.
It was a dream come true to actually become parents, and our lives have revolved around that role since that day, over 20 years ago.
Randy and Paul would eventually add to their family, adopting a daughter, now 12, and another son, now 16. The twins, now 20, are both in college. In 2008, when gay marriage was briefly legalized in California, the couple got married there. But their marriage is still not recognized in Kentucky. Paul Campion.
It affects us in so many ways. Death benefits, health insurance.
Because Kentucky does not recognize them as one family, they have to have two family health insurance policies. And when Paul was diagnosed with prostate cancer 3 years ago, they had to shop for a doctor who would recognize Randy as his full partner with decision-making power if necessary.
I think so many people being out nowadays just shows everybody how incredibly boring and normal we are.
Across the state line in Tennessee, veterinarians Sophie Jesty and Val Tanko are the quintessential high-achieving professional couple.
The decisions about where to live are often career-driven.
That's Sophie, a specialist in animal cardiology. Her spouse, Val, is a specialist in animal gynecology and fertility. They were married in New York in 2011 and began looking for jobs as academic veterinarians. They were elated when both were offered posts at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, where they now teach, do clinical work, and conduct research. But Tennessee does not recognize their New York marriage. That presented further complications when Val got pregnant with their daughter Amelia through artificial insemination. Under Tennessee law, Sophie could not also be Amelia's legal parent. So they sued, and through a legal quirk, Sophie became the first female dad in Tennessee. Because Amelia was born in the short window of time where there was a court order requiring Tennessee to recognize their New York marriage, Sophie Jesty is listed on the birth certificate as Amelia's father.
Well, I'm definitely not a father, but, you know, the state on the birth certificates has only two slots. One is for mother and one is for father. So to be on the birth certificate, my name occupied the father slot.
That could change. If Tennessee wins its case, it could try to reissue Amelia's birth certificate. Though all these couples, and more, are part of the case that will be heard in the Supreme Court, the name that will go down in history is Jim Obergefell.
There was no expectation that this would turn into what it has.
Obergefell's case was the first filed, and the consolidated cases are known as Obergefell versus Hodges, Hodges being the Ohio official whose department handles death certificates. It is the death certificate of Obergefell's longtime partner that's at the center of their case. Jim Obergefell and John Arthur met in their mid-20s and soon became inseparable. Over the next two decades, they even worked together at various large corporate firms in service and training positions. Jim Obergefell.
It was John and Jim. Everybody knew it. It was no issue.
But in 2011, John was diagnosed with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. He quickly went from a cane to a walker to a wheelchair. The two men had talked about getting married, but the native Ohioans wanted to marry in their home state, and same-sex marriage was not legal there. In 2013, the Supreme Court struck down the federal law barring federal recognition of same-sex marriages performed in states where they're legal. John was in his bed in the living room when the news flashed across the TV screen.
I just immediately leaned over, hugged him, gave him a kiss, and said, "Let's get married." It just seemed like the most perfect thing possible to do at that moment.
Friends and family quickly raised the $13,000 for a medical charter to Maryland, and soon the couple was off with a nurse, medical technician, two pilots, and John's aunt, Paulette Roberts, who'd been ordained online so she could marry them. They landed on the tarmac at Thurgood Marshall Airport in Baltimore, and the ceremony commenced.
We got to make those promises to each other, those legal promises, and it was incredible. And within 15 minutes, we were back in the air, heading back to Cincinnati.
Jim says they just never thought about what would happen in Ohio.
And it wasn't until a few days after we got married that that issue was presented to us. And it was heartbreaking.
Through a friend, a civil rights lawyer came to Jim and John's home to explain that Ohio would not recognize the marriage.
He pulled out a blank death certificate and said, "Now, do you realize when John dies, the state of Ohio will say he's single, and this blank here for surviving spouse name will be blank. Your name won't show up there, Jim."
The couple immediately filed suit. Because of John's health, the judge heard arguments the following court day, and that same afternoon issued his ruling requiring the state to recognize Jim as John's spouse on a death certificate. 3 months and 11 days later, John Arthur died. The death certificate listed Jim Obergefell as his surviving spouse. If the state wins its case in the Supreme Court, it can reissue a death certificate without Jim's name.
We did not set out to be activists. We did not set out to become a named plaintiff at the Supreme Court. Nothing at all like that. We just simply wanted respect.
Obergefell knows his name will be on a landmark case, whichever way it goes.
But for me, it's still just about me and John. It's a very personal thing to me still.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.